You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, it's Mike, and welcome to Earth Station One. That's right, folks. We are back again, and we are going to the movies. We are going to check out Christopher Robin. That's right. We're going back to 100 Acre Woods, and we have a great crew to talk all about the return to Pooh Corner. Speaking of Pooh Corner, the man I think of as an imaginary friend, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy. I'm not imaginary. I'm as real as Harvey.
Okay, that says it all. How are you this week, my friend?
I'm all right. It's been a good week, but you know, we're getting ready for Dragon Con, so it's been stressful. The weeks leading up to Dragon Con, it seems like it gets more and more stressful, and then Dragon Con is like a pop release.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We definitely could say it is definitely a pop release. And you know, it's like, I think that's why Dragon Con goes so crazy, is because there's so much building up to it, and it's just all culminating in this 4-day huge event.
Oh, it's crazy. But you know, I mean, I'm glad that we kind of have this show just moving along to sort of keep us somewhat steady in the weeks ahead.
Oh, very much so. And I think it's going to, you know, having this movie to watch next week, we have a great topic and we'll talk about that at the end of the show. And, you know, there's just so much to look forward to still before Dragon Con that, you know, it'll still feel like it's here just like that.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
So exactly. So it should be cool. Let's take a minute to thank everyone who has been donating to our Patreon. We appreciate it more than you could ever imagine. You know, we definitely are still putting up new stuff up there. Just yesterday, as of this recording, I posted the Red Dwarf panel from 2017's Dragon Con. And there's going to be more stuff going up next week. So, or even later this week. I know our friends over at the Flopcast are going to have an original episode to post up to the Patreon. And it doesn't take a lot to get signed up. You could sign up for as little as a dollar. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. Or you can also go to the ESO Network webpage, which is ESONetwork.com, and click right on the top navigation and right there, Patreon. Doesn't get much easier than that. And also with back to school, of course, we wouldn't be saying back to school without thinking of Amazon.com for all your shopping needs. You can go click on that link. I know all the other podcasts out there have Amazon links, and you know they're begging for you to support them that way too. But you know, you're listening to our podcast. Why not show some ESO love and just click on it? It doesn't cost you anything extra. And you know, we get a couple shekels out of it. It's pretty cool. We do appreciate it, of course. And then, of course, we have the T Public store where we have all really cool new T-shirts. And, you know, you could wear ESO logos. You could eat different shows from the different podcasts on the network. Or, you know, there's some great designs up there. And if you go through our, you know, link, again, we help get credit for that. So, you know, it's really awesome. And, you know, if we see you at the con and you're wearing one of the ESO Network T-shirts, and you know, we'll definitely get you something special for it. And it's just not a hug from Mike Gordon or something. It'll be even more special than that.
Oh no, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and say this. If you're wearing an ESO design shirt at Dragon Con and you come by the table in Artist Alley, my table, 831, you will get a free Tiki Zombie pin.
That's pretty awesome. That is really cool. That's very cool that you're doing that, Mikey.
Absolutely. No, it's a, you know, it's just one way of saying mahalo mucho. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you from the bottom of our hearts, most definitely. And it is cool because we do see people with ESO Network shirts on. And it's always fun to, you know, to say, hey, who's your show? And, you know, talking to these people, it's a great way just to bring up discussions and talk about it. And if you're a fan of the show and you see somebody like that, you already have something in common with these people at the show. It's pretty darn awesome. Of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we are going to talk about what's on our mind. What do you got for us this week, Mikey?
Well, you know, last week we spent a pretty good deal of time, it was certainly on my mind last week with seeing the Fred Rogers documentary about what a significant impact he made. And this week, you know, seeing Christopher Robin and seeing the exhibit at the High and everything, which we'll talk about later. I was just thrown with nostalgia for my youth. And I do wonder, you know, sometimes it's hard. It's definitely hard for me to see this because I don't have children. So this is one area I think you might be able to enlighten me a little bit. But it seems to me that I feel really blessed. Because prior to me, prior to my birth, there was no Sesame Street. Prior to my birth, there was no Mr. Rogers Neighborhood Show. Prior to my birth, there wasn't a Disney World. There wasn't a Walt Disney World. There was Disneyland and there was some Disney movies. And certainly Disney's been doing his thing for a lot longer than I've been alive. But prior to my birth, there was only, like, I think only preceded by a couple years is Charles Schulz with Peanuts, you know. But I look at these guys like Fred Rogers, Jim Henson, Walt Disney, and Charles Schulz as icons. Like, if I had to build a Mount Rushmore of my childhood, those would be the faces that I would opt to put on them. And I don't see that there's a force like that. There are people like that, certainly concerned with children's programming, but just in general, like today. I feel like that's just something that happened right around the 60s and into the 70s until, you know, the 80s I think they're all gone now. And it's just very strange for me to think that there's no one like that for generations now. Now I could be wrong. Maybe, you know, there's creators out there that have sort of supplanted those folks, but I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that there's actually like that tradition continues, or do you think that's a bygone era?
No, I think the tradition continues, but in a different way, because there's mixed media and so many different outlets now than there were when we were kids. Because truthfully, when you and I were growing up, we had four or five channels at the most to watch stuff on TV. And the biggest educational, you know, proactive way was, of course, PBS. And, you know, then we had our Saturday morning cartoons growing up. But, you know, I saw it when, you know, with my nephew, Dan, and then with William, especially, you know, so much more options and so much more out there for people to how to educate, for the people to learn, to entertain the children. You know, it started, you know, with the Teletubbies or Barney. God forbid I said that name on this podcast. Then you also had the Wiggles as William got older. And, you know, you still had Sesame Street. You still had, you know, some other things that were somewhat familiar for us growing up. But, you know, it evolved. And then more and more of cartoons. You had Thomas the Tank Engine. You had, you know, you had all these different things like Reading Rainbow and, you know, shows like that that we didn't witness and such, but we probably could talk to Ashley, who's going to be on the show later, and she probably grew up with a lot of those. And I'm not trying to make fun of her age by no means.
No. I recognize all those are cool things. I just don't recognize them as being like, I just don't recognize the creative forces that like as powerful, you know, like in my mind, when I was thinking about it, the only person I can think of over the last maybe 30 years that kind of comes close to those four people that I mentioned is J.K. Rowling. Now, the the creation of Harry Potter and everything for kids. I mean, talk about getting kids into the bookstores and going crazy for that, right? Like, I think that, like, she can be elevated to that. Now, she's not targeting the little bitties kids, but then, you know, really, outside of a few exceptions, I mean, Jim Henson was all over the place too. I mean, he had Sesame Street, but then he also, you know, produced a lot more, I don't want to say mature programming, but programming for more like, you know, teenagers and adults that could enjoy it. So all ages we'll talk about, right?
Oh, sure.
And I know that there's people, I mean, obviously Brad Bird, who makes great movies for all ages, and Pixar, and, you know, Disney still does its thing and everything like that. But as far as, you know, like, I just see, like, there's a bunch of people kind of still carrying on the tradition in some ways, but it feels like it's gotten, I don't know, it feels like to me anyway, that the message and the creations have gotten more and more watered down over the years rather than being really innovative.
No, I agree completely with that. It's not the same. You don't have a Fred Rogers. You don't have a Sesame Street. You don't have an electric company. You don't have things like that for later generations, but you had different things. You had, you know, different ways for them to, the kids to learn, because multimedia started picking up and there were other ways for children to, you know, to learn and stuff, to get them into things. J.K. Rowling is a great example for that. But you also had, you know, like R.L. Stein, you had, you know, Lemony Snicket's, you had, you know, you have all these other authors who also did similar things. They just didn't become as big as J.K. Rowling, per se. But right. you also had a lot of programming educational by Disney for Disney Kids and such. You know, when William was a little kid, we used to watch this TV show called Bear in the Big Blue House. And it was wonderful for the messages it was giving to the kids and such. And it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. It was pretty cool. But you didn't have the same thing, even with that. You know, Bear was a great example, but you didn't have, you know, a Mr. Rogers at the time, because he had retired by that point. Or, you know, and Sesame Street was a shadow of itself by that point. You know, it still was wonderful. It still, you know, we watched it every day, but, you know, Sesame was the biggest thing. And, you know, now what, Sesame Street is going to be on HBO. So, you know, it's not even done by public television anymore, I think.
Yes, it is.
No, HBO.
Yes.
HBO bought the rights to Sesame Street.
HBO is just showing it every once in a while. They're not, it's not exclusive to HBO.
Okay. But I know they bought, you know, the rights to it and such. So
they bought the rights to air it, and they're airing it as part of some programming. And I don't know, they must get some sort of tax write off or something on it. I don't really understand how that works, but I mean, they show it like an hour or something like that. They make it available in the HBO app, but Sesame Street is still on every day on the Children's Television Workshop.
I'm sure it is. And there's other shows too, of stuff, you know, like Magic School Bus and, you know, other things too, because I know they have a next generation of Magic School Bus, because Magic School Bus was popular when Dan was little, and I remember William loved all the books and stuff, or Treehouse Adventures, and, you know, there's tons of things that he grew into different stages, and it also depended what stage of life he was at too, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no.
There isn't what like we had growing up by any means. And like you put it, the Mount Rushmore of children's television at that time.
Well, like I said, it's not just, I mean, television, yes. I mean, Charles Schulz I put in there, even though, you know, I mean, you could argue, I mean, I would argue that the Peanut specials, Christmas, Halloween, and Thanksgiving were just as important as anything else. So as any of the, you know, strips that he did. So, I mean, and television was much earlier then. So there was a lot more freedom, a lot more, of an ability to be a pioneer of sorts than there is now. And I don't mean to be like this old fogey that's just like, oh, it's back in my day. We had real, like, you know, good stuff, but, I mean, it just seems to me that I just think it's a shame because, I mean, I hope that there are. I mean, I see, like, J.K. Rowling seems to have a huge impact with children. But that's, like I said, that's a little different. The messages that are being sent are a little different there than they were. And granted, I mean, it's a different time, so they will be. And I guess on a different level, you know, I'm really keen to see – it's really good to see, like, people getting really excited for, like, you know – Bill Nye the Science Guy. I mean, that guy's a rock star among, you know, all ages. So, you know, in some ways he's like a science pioneer in that regard, you know.
To a point, but you know, he had predecessors before him.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, they all did. I mean, yeah. Even the guys I'm talking about had predecessors before that.
Oh, of course. You know, you had Captain Kangaroo and stuff like that, but for Bill Nye, who we were just talking about, you also had people, you know, you had Mr. Science, you had, of course, Beekman, if you remember from Beekman's World, who was very similar to what Bill Nye the Science Guy was doing on his show. But Bill Nye has more of a slick way of doing it. You also have Neil deGrasse Tyson doing Cosmos, open to all ages and such. And they're coming out with a second season of that next year. So, you know, and they're showing that not just on Fox, they're also showing that on National Geographic, and they're showing that in schools, and which is amazing. You know, I think it's pretty darn awesome, but it goes in waves, and it also goes, you know, in what, you know, you, how people want to raise their kids and what they want to introduce them to. There's so much out there that we don't even know about because neither of us now have children that age or that age group that, you know, has to view that or how they view it on the computers or how they do in multimedia. And now it's a lot of it's international. They have international versions of a lot of the things we're familiar with too, which is pretty darn awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that, you know, as far as my nephew goes, who's, you know, 11, I find it, you know, I mean, he's all wrapped up in like YouTube channels and I don't even know who half those people are. So, you know, I guess on some level it's there, but it just doesn't seem as impactful. And look, I want there to be, you know, good messages being sent out there and I want there to be good people taking care of, you know, our us as a society. Because it's not just for kids. I mean, a lot of those guys that I mentioned, you know, I can enjoy them into my adulthood as much as I did when I was a kid. And I don't think it's a nostalgia factor so much as it is they really appeal to all ages.
Oh, exactly. And that's a lot of the things that William was watching, you know, growing up. I got a kick out of a lot of it, too. But then again, a lot of people have said I have the mentality of a 4-year-old anyway. So it's okay. So it was pretty darn awesome with that. So, yeah, I definitely would love to hear from people at home. You know, tell us what you guys think. You know, who nowadays are like these people that Mike had mentioned. We definitely want to hear. It's a great discussion. Actually, I could even see that going into a full episode with more people talking about it.
We shall.
Okay. I definitely think we should come back and explore this one. Please write us, earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute with the Geek Seat.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
Winnie the Pooh, tubby little tubby, all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Will he dare silly old bear.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. It's now time for the Geeksy segment. And we have a brand new victim, I mean guest, coming to us all the way from Australia. Let's welcome Goff to the show.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Howdy, sir. Welcome to the station. I think, Mike, I think this is a first. I think this is our first guest from Down Under.
I think so, because we've had folks from Japan. We've had folks from India and the UK and also Greece, if you remember.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So, yes, there's a, you know, the geek seat is a terrifying instrument. So we have to go on far and wide to get our victims. I mean, guests. So it's really cool to have you. So for those people who may not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I run a production company called Beer Nuts Productions, and we're predominantly a film production company, but we've also done some audio downloads and some books and stuff, but we're mainly film. So to date, we've done one feature film and 14 short films, and everything is fully independent, and we distribute it ourselves. So people just go onto the Beer Nuts Productions website, which is beernutsproductions.com, and they can download and watch all of our work. So it's we're a truly independent production company.
That is not an easy task. That is not an easy way to make a living, so to speak, sir.
No, it's not. But I think it does have its advantages. And the main one is we can produce whatever we want to produce. I mean, I've got nobody telling me that I can't do, because we do mainly comedy stuff. And so I've got nobody telling me that joke's a bit too inappropriate, or the censor won't like that, so you can't do that, or anything like that. So I can produce whatever I want to produce and how I want to produce it, which means that, you know, and the same with the timing of the projects. I mean, most of the short films go for around half an hour or thereabouts, but, you know, I've got nobody telling me, you know, it has to be this amount of length, or you have to do this, or yeah. Like in Australia, to get funding for your films in Australia, a lot of the requirements are, you know, you have to have cultural content, you have to have this, you have to have that. But I don't have any of those rules apply to me, so I can do whatever I want, which is a really cool thing. But then you have the drawback, obviously, is you don't have the huge dollars to play with. And there are ways to get around that and still make some really funny and good films.
Yeah, especially this day and age where it's really, independent work is a lot, in some ways, it's a lot more accessible than it ever has been. And that's a sort of a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. There's actually quite a famous Australian producer, TV producer. He made a bunch of sketch comedy shows back in the 80s and 90s, and now he's actually a lecturer at a university over here. And I went to listen to him talk once, and he said, which is quite right, he said, it's never been cheaper and easier to make a production. He was mainly talking about TV, but he was like, it's never been easier and cheaper to make something, but it's never been harder to get it seen, because there's so many formats now where people are trying to get their work shown. So he said it's really, because as you say, I mean, with technology, things are a lot cheaper and easier to make, which is fantastic. But then it's a battle to get your work actually seen by the public. So that's where the shift has happened.
I have to, you know, looking at your bio, the one thing that struck out, it's kind of just done in passing, which I have to credit you as well. But yet, my understanding is that like a lot of this started with your first feature film, which was a documentary effort, right? And it says that, now, is this right? You're the first legally blind person to write, produce, edit, direct, and star in a feature film?
That's correct. I also thought I might cater it, but then I thought, no, I'm probably doing too much then. You
know? Well, yes, that's awesome.
But no, you are correct. Yeah, so that film was done. It was my first feature film, and that was done back in 2010. And it's probably the only serious project I've done. And it is. It's a documentary on disability and mental health, which are two subjects that are quite close to my heart, being, as you say, I am legally blind. And in Australia, there's not a lot of services and help for people who have a disability. And so a lot of mental health problems then start to arise in the disability community because of the discrimination and whatnot that people face. So I made a feature-length documentary. See, I wasn't able to, people would laugh at me when I said I wanted to be a filmmaker, you know, and they wouldn't give me funding and all that kind of stuff. So I thought the best way to show people that I can actually do what it is I say I can do is just to go out and do it. So that's pretty much what I did. So, you know, one of the points of the documentary is, you know, well, I've written this, I've produced it, I've directed it, I've edited it, I'm starring in it. You know, I can actually make these films. I can do what it is I can do, which shows that people with disabilities, they have lots to offer, you know. So that was kind of one of the underlying points of the film.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a credit there. Let's talk about a little bit, some about your inspirations. Growing up, you're a child of the 80s, literally, right?
Yes.
What were some of your inspirations growing up? What made filmmaking in particular an attractive venue for you to tell stories?
Well, it started off wanting to be a writer. Like I always loved writing, like writing little books and plays and sketches. And I was a massive fan of like the English sketch comedy shows and stuff like that that would come on my TV screen. I couldn't get enough of that kind. There was a few, The Fast Show, which people in the UK would absolutely remember The Fast Show. Some great Australian sketch comedy shows. The D-Generation is something people could look up on YouTube. They were fantastic, a group of Australian comedians that had their own sketch comedy show. And so it was, and a lot of old English comedy like Monty Python and the old British comics and stuff that I really sort of grew up on. And that sort of created my love of writing. And then once I had a bunch of scripts, I was like, well, I want to get these made. How can I do that? And I thought to myself, well, you know, then, like I was saying earlier, the best way to do it I found was just to make them myself, because I was having trouble getting funding and people actually wanting to assist me. So I thought, well, if I want to get these scripts made, I'm going to have to start up my own production company, Beer Nuts Productions, which I did, and get into it myself. So to go back to your original question, yeah, it was a love of writing and mainly, like I say, sketch comedy and old British comedians I used to really enjoy as well.
That's awesome. And yeah, there's a great history of British and Australian and even Canadian sketch comedy. Brilliant folks, you know, whether it's Monty Python or Kids in the Hall or a lot of those.
Well, see, when I was growing up, it's fair to say I didn't have a lot of supervision. So I was going off to the cinema and watching things like Wayne's World and stuff like that when I was only like, well, I was born in 81 and Wayne's World was about, what, 1990 or 91, something like that. So I was only like 10. So I probably shouldn't have been going to the cinema to watch those sorts of films. But, you know, I was going to watch those sort of, because there were some really great films out that time where a lot of the stand-up comedians of that era, like Chris Farley and Mike Myers and Adam Sandler, were really making some really good films back then, you know, some really funny stuff. Especially, I love Mike Myers. I think he's great. So, you know, I used to go and watch them in the cinema as well. And, you know, used to love all that sort of stuff too.
Now, in addition to writing and producing and directing your shorts, do you star in all of them as well? Or do you have a company that you use, or?
Well, the good thing is I come cheap. So I usually squeeze myself into the film somehow, you know. But when it comes to casting the film, I'm really fussy about the cast because I think the actors are so important in any production. So there's about 20 different talent agencies around where I'm at in Australia. And so when I've got a script that I'm ready to make, I'll send out a brief to the agents like any production company would. For example, you know, I need a guy aged 30 to play a working class kind of plumber, for example. And so they'll send me a bunch of options. I'll hold auditions and I find the right actor for the job. So it's done very much like that. But in saying that, I have found that recently a lot of the actors, I'm using some of the actors a couple of times because they do really, really good jobs for me. And then, you know, the brief comes through and I'm like, well, I think that particular actor would be really good at that. So I get them in for an audition and they do a great job. So there are a few actors that people will see pop up in a few different projects, but no, everything is cast individually. It's really important that it works that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for Beer Nuts Productions, if there's a company creed, a company motto, something that you have is your goal with your production company, what would you say is that is?
Well, I think there's 7 billion people on this planet, and I won't be happy until all 7 billion have been entertained by one of my films. So that really is the goal, man. I love making people laugh, and my films hopefully do that. And so, yeah, I just want to entertain as many people as I can. So yeah, just hopefully everybody listening today jumps on the Beer Nuts Productions website and starts watching and enjoying my nonsense.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just one last thing before we strap you down in the seat. Would you say a lot of your work has a definite, like, Australian vibe to it? I mean, do you get a sense of Australian humor, Australian culture by these? Or do you think they're more, you push more to a wider audience?
Yeah, no, I make a very special effort that I'm not too Australian so that anybody can enjoy my work. I don't want people watching it and going, what the hell are they talking about? You know, I want to make sure that everybody, it's totally accessible for everybody. So no, I try and make a very conscious effort when I'm writing my scripts to make sure that they are universal in language. I mean, even when I'm picking locations. So the last film I did, which was a mockumentary called A Day in the Life of a Personal Trainer, when we're going for the locations, for example, with the gym that we use, I wanted to make sure that it was like an everyman's gym so that, you know, it doesn't look like it's specific for one type of thing, so that anybody watching goes, oh, it's a gym. He could be anywhere. He could be in Canada, Australia, the UK, doesn't matter where he is, you know. So that I make a very conscious effort to make all my films as accessible and universal as I can, because at the end of the day, you know, I want people, like I say, from all over the world to enjoy my stuff. So it's really important.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I definitely encourage everybody to go out and check out BeerNutsProductions.com to see the movies themselves, to check out your work. It is great fun, and it did put a smile on my face, sir.
Oh, well, very, very pleased I was able to. I suppose that means now I'm down to 6,900,900,000.
Exactly. <right there. laughs> You can check one more off. all right, Mike, he is firmly secure in the seat.
I thought you fellas were joking, but these straps are really, they're starting to chafe on my wrist, man.
We don't, as entertaining as we try to be, we don't joke about the geek seat.
No, clearly. Yes.
No, we don't. And now this is where Mike actually starts applying some of the pressure to you.
Fair enough.
So, Goff, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
I'm ready to go, fellas.
Okay. Goff, what was your favorite geek out moment?
Well, I'm a massive comedy nerd. That's my thing, is comedy. So my all-time favorite comedian is Stephen Lynch, I don't know if you guys have heard of him, an American comedian who does comedy songs. And I just think he is the funniest, just the greatest. I love everything he does. And so when I was over in America, I was in New York and he was playing at Alfred University, which is upstate New York. So I got a 7-hour bus ride and a hotel room, and it was at the university. So the ticket was only like $5 to go and see him. And yet it cost me like around $250 in like transport and accommodation to go see this guy. But yeah, watching him live was probably, I was like a little girl at a Pink concert, you know, I was loving every second of it. So I reckon that was, and luckily for me, he's been out to Australia since then a couple of times, so I've been able to see him a few more times. But yeah, he's my all-time favorite human being, and seeing him was just incredible.
So you squealed like a little girl. Got it.
I think I probably had to apologize to the people sitting next to me, because yeah, I was probably squealing like a little girl. Yes.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Well, it was on that same night at Alfred University. So he stays around and signs some autographs and CD covers and stuff after the show. And I got my stuff signed by him, which was awesome. And then I went to have a photo taken with him. And it was back in 2003. So, iPhones and stuff weren't around back then. So I had just a regular camera, and the camera didn't work. So I wasn't able to get a photo with him. And I was devastated. I was crushed. It was just terrible. But then again, luckily, when he came out in Australia a few years ago, I got my photo with him then. So it was a happy ending, but it took about 6 years to get my photo with him. But yeah, so it turned out as a happy ending, but at the moment I was very upset. Yeah, so yes.
No, I totally see that. What geeks you out the most?
I get way too excited about if there's a really cool film that I want to go watch at the cinema. I get really, really way too excited. For example, the one that I'm like super excited about going to watch at the moment, it comes out in about a month's time, is the adults only Muppet movie, the Happy Time Murders. I don't know if you guys have seen the trailer for that.
Oh yeah.
But I'm so excited. I'll be like the first person in line to go see that film. I'm just, yeah, next level excited. So I get way too excited about going to watch certain films. Absolutely.
No, I can totally see that. There's certain movies that you just like, oh, I got to do it. I got to do it. You know, that totally geeks me out.
Yes, absolutely.
What turns your geek off, though?
Okay, so I really don't like it when people hang shit on other people about what they love. So, for example, I mean, the best example is if someone – I mean, Star Wars is a good example. So some people love it and they get dressed up and they get into it and they go to conventions and all that sort of stuff. And you know what? Good for them. They're not hurting anybody. They're having a good time. Everybody's cool. You know what I mean? But I don't like it then when people turn around and are nasty to them or tease them or anything like that. You know, everybody's allowed to have their passions in life and enjoy what they enjoy. And I don't like it when people, you know, tear them down and cut them off at the knees. I don't like that sort of attitude. That really, when I hear somebody being nasty about something of that nature, that really turns me off. I really don't like that sort of attitude. You know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, leave people alone to enjoy what they want to enjoy. You know, it's a free world that we live in. Everybody should be allowed to have fun and enjoy themselves, you know? So if that means dressing up as your favorite character and going to a convention, then buddy, knock yourself out. Have a great time, I say.
I like this guy. I think we should keep him around. Well, he is strapped to the seat, so we are going to...
I've got no choice. That's right. Yeah,
exactly.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
I reckon I would like to meet the Kirsten Dunst Mary Jane from the Spider-Man movies, because she looks super hot as a redhead. I just thought... I remember going to the cinema to watch that film, the first one, and I was like, wow, she looks really cute as a redhead. So, I think I'd like to meet her. I'd get rid of Peter Parker and I'd just sort of, you know, saddle up next to her. And I reckon that'd be the one. Because actually most Mary Janes look pretty cute from most of the films that I've seen. But I think she's probably the hottest. So I'm going to go with her.
I think you got it right there. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Yeah, so the modern day James Bond. Because he's lost all of his comedy. He's lost all of his sex. There's just no fun anymore. It's just all blowing stuff up and it's all way too serious. You know, he used to be fun. He used to get some cool gadgets and have some fun and there was comedy. There used to be fun films to watch and they've just, I don't know, I think I'm in the minority probably on this one, but I there's just no fun anymore. There's no jokes. There's no all that sexual innuendo and stuff. You know, it's all gone. And, I know it's... they did it all to be more politically correct, but sometimes not being politically correct is kind of fun and kind of hilarious. So, you know, I think people need to relax and make James Bond more like what he used to be, because he is boring now and I've got no time for him anymore.
That's an interesting way to put it. I like that. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Anything from a Monty Python film. You know, because they're all so quotable. All those movies and sketches are just all so quotable. Anything from any of those sketches or movies would be absolutely, yeah. Because actually, this might make you fellas laugh. When they did their live show about 2 or 3 years ago, they did their comeback live show in London. They did, it got simulcast into cinemas all over the world. And so I went along to watch it. And so I was having a chat to a friend of mine. And I'm like, oh, I was sitting there and I was surrounded by all these nerds. And I thought, I'm not one of them, am I? And she said, can you quote Monty Python sketches? I'm like, yeah. She says, yeah, you're one of them. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't realize. But anything from a Monty Python film, I'm all about. So, yeah.
Oh, that is awesome.
Guilty. Yeah. I was one of those nerds in the audience too.
Me too.
Yeah, Because it was quite kind of funny. I'm looking around going, wow, look at it. Because everybody was like between 30 and 50 years of age, and they're all sort of singing along and quoting the lines and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, I thought I was the only one kind of thing. But yeah, there's a whole group of us apparently. So yeah.
Yep, you're one of them.
Oh, and again, I'm proud to be one of them because it's just brilliant comedy. So you know what? Yeah, absolutely.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
What I'm doing now, really, to be honest. I mean, you know, making movies and making people laugh. I mean, it's kind of a geeky thing that I do, you know, making films and that kind of stuff, because I'm a film and comedy nerd, and that's sort of what I do for a career. So I'm very lucky that I get to do what I love for a job. So, yeah, I wouldn't change my job for anything.
That is awesome, man. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
I reckon Mark Zuckerberg's job, because I don't think he's having a real good time of it at the moment. And I don't want to be that man, no matter how much money is involved, because I don't care how much money he earns. There's no way I'd take on his job or want to be him in any way, shape or form. So, yeah, I don't want to be Mark Zuckerberg. So that's off the table.
That's a great answer, actually. I don't think anyone's ever answered that one, Mike. So that is awesome. All right, Goff, you ready for your final question?
Go for it, fellas.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I reckon appearing in a Muppet show, I would squeal like a girl. To be a guest on one of the Muppet shows or any kind of thing to do with the Muppets would just be the great – that would be the day – where I could just lay down and die after that happened, I reckon, because it would just be the coolest thing ever. Every time I go and watch, like when I go see the Happy Time Murders, I know Melissa McCarthy's in it, and I'm like, oh man, I wish I was her, because how much fun would that be? It would just, I'd also, just on a purely, again, I suppose, real geeky film level, I'd find it really interesting to see how they go about actually making it, because I mean, they're able to make the puppets as good as human now, and they do everything that we do. It's really clever. So on a nerdy level, I'd love to see how they make it. But as a fan level, it would just be like, it'd be the greatest thing ever.
I think that's one of the best answers we've ever had.
Yeah, that's true. I can't argue with that. I'm like, wow, maybe my fantasy's not as cool as that.
Wow.
But how cool would it be standing next to Fozzie Bear and doing jokes and stuff? But it'd be the coolest thing ever. That's absolutely true.
God, between the two of us, God, I wonder who would have the worst jokes. Waka, waka, waka. Well, Goth, congratulations, man. You've made it through the geek seat.
Well, does this mean you fellas will untie me now?
That's not part of the deal.
Tell the young man what he's won, Mr. Mike Gordon.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth, I'm not sure what this is, translates to in Australia, but it's probably close to nothing.
Nothing is something, technically.
Yes, well, yes. I mean, that's what Winnie the Pooh says, right? A whole lot of nothing adds up to something. So
that's absolutely right.
So very cool. It's been very good having you with us. Very phenomenal. I still can't believe it. For those people who want to check out your work, where should they go?
So, yeah, just beernutsproductions.com. That's the only place you can view my stuff. And also, I'm all over all the social medias. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, whatever you're on, I'm on. So just type in Beer Nuts Productions and I'll come up. So yeah, all the socials, and obviously the main place where people can watch my stuff is the website, which is, beernutsproductions.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Check it out. And the YouTube channel has really cool previews that's what I watched the clips as well. They're very entertaining. So anybody who is a fan of all that British stuff that we've mentioned, all the sketch comedy, check it out.
Well, thank you very much, Phil. I endorse your endorsement.
I was going to pile on top of that, but instead I'll just say, you know what? Go check it out. It's been great having you, sir. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with our review of Christopher Robin.
everybody. Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Michelle here. How are you doing? Broadway right now, kind of overrun with jukebox musicals, which kind of a lazy way to make a musical, and some of them are better than others. The Donna Summer one did not get such good reviews, but Head Over Heels with the music of the Go-Go's has just opened at the Hudson Theater, and it sounds like a lot of fun, and it's getting some really good reviews. Who would have thought that a musical performed in iambic pentameter based on a 16th century prose poem combined with the music of the Go-Go's would be a Broadway musical? It's sort of a sex romp a la Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. Vulture magazine calls it a little bit Dr. Seuss, a little bit rock and roll. So here's hoping it's a hit, and there's some touring companies that go out so we can all check this one out. Also, Rush is the next band to become Funko Pop figures. These look to be kind of pricey if you want to get your hands on the set. It's an exclusive to the Fan Expo Canada in Toronto, August 30th to September 2nd. Getty is wearing his little dragon kimono and playing his Black Fender jazz bass. It's recognizably a jazz bass, but it's probably not quite as accurate since Funko got smacked a while back by Gibson for getting the details on the guitars just a little too right. Speaking of basses, Geddy Lee has written a book that you can use the ESO link to pre-order on Amazon. It comes out December 4th. It's called Geddy Lee's Book of Big Beautiful Bass, and the book will be big. It's a coffee table book. $58 price tag listed. In the book, Geddy will talk about the history of the bass, the instruments in his collection, and he will interview some of his famous bass player friends. So all fans of the bass, there is your Christmas present. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will catch you soon.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
I do like a party.
Come on, babe.
What should happen if you forget about me?
Silly old bear.
I won't ever forget about you, Pooh. I promise. Not even when I'm 100.
We should be working this weekend, Robin.
But I promised my wife and daughter I'd take them away this weekend.
All hands on deck.
You won't be coming to the cottage.
Well, it can't be helped.
Your life is happening now, right in front of you.
What to do, what to do, what to do. What to do, indeed.
Pooh?
Christopher Robin.
No. The tree I remember was in the countryside, not here in London. There's no opening.
I suppose it's where it needs to be.
Well, that's a silly explanation.
Why, thank you.
Pooh, why are you here?
Oh, yes, I need your help. I've lost all of my friends.
Let's get to the bottom of this. Look up, Pooh. Here I come. It would appear that I am stuck.
Have you just eaten honey?
I have not just eaten honey. I wonder which way.
I always get to where I'm going by walking away from where I have been.
Do you?
That's the way I do it.
Hello, Eeyore.
Christopher Robin, it's you. Played again.
Let's go and see if we can find Piglet. I've already stayed far too long. Hello, everyone.
It's Christopher Robin!
So nice to see you all again.
Why, thank you.
Silly old bear. I was wrong about work. I was wrong about everything, and I've got to get back to my family.
Farewell, Christopher Robin. I would have liked it to go on for a while longer. Perhaps it's our turn to save Christopher. You must be Madeline.
Wait, you're the bearer of my father's drawings.
Yes. Do you know where he is?
I do.
Let's bounce! I just saw the most preposterous imposter. Look at him.
Digger! Eel! Piglet!
If anyone wants to clap, now is the time to do it.
Oh, bother.
told to stay at dead.
I don't remember being cheery.
People say nothing is impossible, but I do nothing every day.
No, Pooh, that's not the... Oh, never mind.
Hey, gang, now it's time to go to the movies, and we are going to talk all about Christopher Robin. Take it away, Mikey.
Yes, and we've got, of course, our movie crew here back on the station. Ashley, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always fun to be back, and I think this might be our last movie of the summer.
Really? Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be a lonely August.
Yep. So it's kind of a long wait till some of the bigger movies hit in the fall, but it's been fun and hard to believe that it's kind of over. Seems like we were just talking about Infinity War.
Well, we could always go back and watch Mission Impossible again.
Yes. Yeah. If you haven't seen Mission Impossible, go see it. It was awesome.
Yeah. I have not seen that one yet. So, and of course we have Alex with us as well.
Always a pleasure. This has been an interesting summer for films. And I love the fact that we're not ending on a blockbuster, but rather just one that we all collectively said, this is one we want to talk about. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And talk about it, we shall. Yes. Christopher Robin, which is a brand new adventure featuring Winnie the Pooh and friends. A little bit different. This is the first time, I believe this is the first time they've been quote unquote live action.
Mm-hmm.
Although they are mostly, I think 90%, maybe 95, maybe 99% CG.
Yeah.
And yes, this could have easily gone either way. This was a risk on Disney's part. It is a Disney movie, not like the Goodbye Christopher Robin, that movie that came out last year, which was more of a, I don't want to call it a docudrama, but it was more of a behind the scenes look at the creation of Winnie the Pooh and its authors and Christopher Robin Milne, actually the real life boy behind that inspired that story. Anyway, enough about that one. We're not going to review Goodbye Christopher Robin. Hello Christopher Robin is what we're going to review.
Shouldn't that be Howdy Christopher Robin?
Howdy, yes. Howdy Christopher Robin is what it originally was called. And then I threatened to sue and they took the howdy off of it. So, I think this one was interesting. Going in, didn't know what to expect because, like I said, it could have gone either way. I didn't know how respectful they would be to the source material. And I was very, 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 very... I don't want to say surprised. I was very, very pleased is what I was. It felt like a warm hug, this movie really did. So a warm hug from a Pooh Bear is what it felt like to me, which I thought was very appropriate. Ashley, what were your expectations going into this? I assume you were familiar with Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, I was. And actually, grew up hearing about the stories, watching the cartoons. So I'd actually hadn't really thought about the characters in a long time. And I wanted to send a thank you to Alex for, I think he's the one who suggested we put this on the podcast schedule, because otherwise I might've probably waited for this one for DVD, but I'm so, so glad I went to see it in the theater. I knew I was going to be in trouble when they hadn't even gotten through the intro sequence and I already had tears welling in my eyes. So it was just such an emotional movie, but in a good way. And I love how you described it as being a warm hug. And that's really what it felt like. It reintroduced me to the characters and reminded me all these happy memories I had as a kid and all these fun characters, but then also a good reminder about how the message carries well for adults too. So again, I just really like that, a warm hug. That's the best way to describe this movie, and was just really glad I took time out of my weekend to see it in the theater.
Alex?
I've made it no secret that Winnie the Pooh is one of my all-time favorite characters. I'm in fact wearing a Winnie the Pooh T-shirt as we're recording this, and because it's just something that I happen to throw on. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and that says a lot for me. I'm not a huge fan of Ewan McGregor. I've only seen one movie of his that I genuinely really liked. And the fact is that in that film, he was doing an Albert Finney impression. So going in, there were some concerns on how heavy-handed the story was going to be. But I could listen to Jim Cummings just talk as Winnie the Pooh for 4 hours and not care. There's just something magical about his interpretation of Winnie the Pooh's pure innocence that just resonates, and it harkens back to the original Disney shorts, and even before that, the stuff that was written by Milne and illustrated by E.H. Shepherd. So this one, I really, going in, yeah, there was a chance of it not being what we wanted. And instead, it was very much what we needed.
Yeah, well put, well put. I mean, you know, I think Disney and other franchises have tried to, you know, sort of, you know, give us a grown-up or long-awaited sequels to an old classic. I think, you know, obviously Hook comes to mind. And I never did see what's the one with Johnny Depp and playing like the Peter Pan? Is that Beyond Neverland or something?
Finding Neverland is where he's doing the J.M. Barrie story. Gotcha. And that's actually another really, really good one. And I highly recommend that because that done by the same people who did this.
Have you seen Goodbye, Christopher Robin?
I have not. And in fact, the book, I saw the book available and it said now a major motion picture. And my wife was like, is that the one we're going to see tonight? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. That kind of threw me off. As being a Winnie the Pooh fan, it actually threw me that there was a Christopher Robin movie that I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's pretty, I guess I hate to say obscure, but it is an independent movie.
Fox Searchlight. So. Yeah.
I don't think it got a lot of attraction, and you know, and Disney certainly likes to bury things that they feel like are treading on its trademark. So I could definitely see where that one was kind of. I mean, just look at all the, you know, Jungle Book type movies that have been made outside of Disney that have gotten buried. You know, but anyway, Mike. So what was your thoughts going into this? Were you optimistic? Were you thinking, oh, it's not going to work, or you know, what were you thinking?
I was full of hope, actually, and that's surprising coming from me, actually, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You don't mean to make you out of Mr. Negative, but yes, that is surprising.
No, because after all the different blockbusters and superhero movies and, you know, Mission Impossibles and, you know, all these different animated films and everything, we get this film. This was a breath of fresh air. Coming from the very first preview to seeing when Christopher Robin was sitting in the park and all of a sudden you hear Pooh behind him and it's just like, oh, and it's just amazing. And just, you know, like Judy, when she saw the preview with me, she was like, I got goosebumps when I heard the voice. And it was just, it was awesome. And this is what we needed right now. And I wish a lot more people felt like that with all the crap that's going on in the world right now, all the crap that's at the movie theaters, and nothing against those movies and such. I love them. I'm, you know, one of the biggest proponent of these films. Something like this is what we needed right now. A hot summer day in the evening going to see a movie that makes you want to go, this is awesome. This is something that we needed. This is something that I could walk out and not feel like I just ran 50 miles. You know, this is a movie where I felt like I was emotionally worn out. Yes, but it was just amazing.
Yeah, the movie does tug at the heartstrings. And I think it works not. I mean, obviously, it's going to be hard to find someone who's not familiar with Winnie the Pooh. So I can't speak to the fact that it works if you've never heard of Winnie the Pooh. If this is your first introduction to Winnie the Pooh, I don't know if this works as well. I think it does, but I can't say that because I am just not that person. I do think though that, you know, so there's a lot of nostalgia there, but it doesn't, I mean, it is about nostalgia. This whole movie is about, like, you know, remembering what you were like as a child, and bring, making you sort of be alive again, which I thought was, you know, pretty inspiring. And like you said, Mike, I think it was a great message for where we are today. Because I think we have forgotten a lot of these simple tales, these simple morality tales that kind of remind us, like, it doesn't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It took us back to a simpler time is a good way to put it.
I mean, I this movie, I think, works for kids, but I think it's really aimed more for adults. I would definitely say that. Even though it's not a quote unquote adult movie, there's no, you know, because I was afraid, you know, that there would try to leak in some, you know, edge to some of the characters, maybe some innuendo or double entendres or something. But I was glad to see that this movie is clean of that. There is none of that. I mean, if you are seeing double meanings in anything that's in Christopher Robin, I think you need to seek help, because I don't think it's there. It's certainly there, not on purpose.
Well, the biggest double entendre is Pooh Bear's name.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
And even that I would not say is, you know, but I do think that they kept it, you know, clean. And I think that what I was really gratified by is that the people who wrote this and directed it really respect Milne's original work, plus the work that Disney did. It's sort of a nice combination of that.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed, and you probably noticed as well, when discussing the animation that Shepard did for the original books, he indicated that while the characters of Pooh and Piglet, Tigger, Eeyore, Kanga, and Roo were all based off of stuffed animals, Rabbit and Owl were actually drawn and illustrated as real animals.
Yeah.
And in the movie, the character stylings of all of them are in that exact same pattern. Owl and Rabbit look like an owl and a rabbit, whereas everyone else looks like a stuffed animal. And I really think that that was a very smart way of doing it, because they could have gone with the idea of the Disney-esque yellow rabbit and the very fluffy styled of owl. And instead they went with the trueness of, of Milne's work and Shepard's drawings, which I think really added to the film.
Interesting. And I didn't even think about that. And it's interesting how those are the characters that do not come over to the real world. They are the ones that stay in Hundred Acre Wood, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, I did appreciate, and I really thought that I saw some people looking online about the trailer. They were saying, oh my, you know, that the CG animation of these characters looks a little creepy. I did not feel that at all in this. I did not get an "ooh, that's not right" kind of attitude. I thought the CG was perfect. I thought they did a really good job at making them look pretty realistic as far as stuffed animals go. Of course, you know, the Tigger is not going to be the Tigger from Shepherd's work, but of course the Disney Tigger, which is fine with me. It just has that sort of Jay Leno, you know, chin. I thought, you know, and of course the voice work matches pretty much those original Winnie the Pooh movies that Disney did in the 60s.
Oh, very much so. I thought it was really well done. I saw the claims of people doing, you know, and saying, the animals look creepy. They look, you know, they don't look like what I was expecting to. Like you said, Mike, they looked like real stuffed animals. They didn't look, I didn't want Roger Rabbit. I didn't want it to look like the Disney cartoons that came to life.
Yeah.
This
like,
was
Pooh
so
Bear's
much
not going to look like a real bear. He's not going to look like a real cub. He's going to look like a stuffed animal.
Because that's what he was, because he was Christopher Robin's stuffed bear.
Yeah.
And it just, that when I saw the criticism, and even in a couple of the reviews and major newspapers and stuff, they said that, and it was just like, what? You know, it's just like, I don't get it and anything. You know, leave your imagination, you know, let it do the walking. Leave your reality at the door, folks.
Ashley, and what? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I thought the realistic stuffed animals really added to the realism and the feel of the movie. When I first saw the trailers, it just like took me a couple seconds because, of course, I'm used to the cartoons as a kid growing up. They had all those bright colors. But then I thought, you know, these are real stuffed animals. They've been worn. They've been loved. They've been played with. And so they look like stuffed animals from like World War II era, which was when Christopher Robin would have been a kid even before that. So it looked like some real stuffed animals, like my grandmother had things like that. So kind of once, you know, it would be very weird, like you guys said, if they looked like the cartoon animals. So I thought that I actually really appreciated that they took the time to make it look like a real old fashioned stuffed animal and to bring back some of those memories probably a lot of people have.
The beginning of this movie, I don't know about you guys, but the beginning of this movie, I was reminded a little bit of the beginning of Up, where you've got this sort of story unfolding that's pretty emotional right in the beginning. Like, you know, and you get to see a massive explosion, which I didn't expect to see in a in a Winnie the Pooh type vehicle. But I thought it was still all tastefully done. Certainly, you know, there's, you know, the adulting that's in this movie is really basic and, as Michelle pointed out to me, kind of hokey, but I think it needs to be in this movie. I think it, you know, there's no need to get really like adult in this movie, merely like mature themes. I think simplicity, I think we can all speak to that.
Yeah. Cause this is, the basics of it is that somewhere, you know, when Christopher Robin left that last time, to go off to boarding school, he was, you know, going off to learn. And then, of course, you know, his father dies and suddenly he has to become the man of the house. And that's not a phrase that any child wants to hear. That's not something any adult wants to hear. So when someone suddenly says you're the man of the house, all of a sudden, everything that you want to do, everything that you have, all of your dreams go by the wayside at that point. And in the books and everything, it indicates that Christopher Robin's favorite thing to do is nothing. And now he's having to work and everything. We haven't mentioned it yet, but I definitely feel the need to mention that while she's not used as much as maybe we would want, that Hayley Atwell is tremendous in this film as well, in the scenes that she's given. The first real scene with her and Ewan McGregor, and it's definitely appearing that there's tension in their relationship, is a very, very powerful scene, especially when you consider the fact that there's no music playing in the background. So it almost makes you feel awkward to be seeing this conversation between the two. Simply because this feels like a very real conversation between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah. And despite the fact that it's got this CG element and it's got humor and hokiness to it, I think this movie really does a great job of tapping into some very real moments. Probably for me, the most real moment and the most like pivotal moment in the entire movie is when Christopher Robin and Pooh return to 100 Acre Wood and they're looking for Pooh's friends, their friends, both of their friends, and all of their friends, and they end up going around in circles. And yes. Robin loses it and starts just yelling at Pooh, which I thought Michelle was going to get out of her chair and slap him. Like, I just, like, she is like, she told me afterwards, she's like, that is not okay. That is not okay. And I was like, wow. But, you know, throughout that, like, then after that yelling, you know, we get this sort of this deadly quiet moment where Pooh's just standing there and he says, did you leave me behind? Oh no, did you let me go?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm telling you, it was like, I mean, that was more powerful, way more powerful to the audience that I saw that I was with. And it wasn't a huge audience, but man, everybody there, that was way more powerful than any snap of the fingers that Thanos could provide. I mean, it just hit us all like hammers to the gut. And I don't know if I'm welling up thinking about it, because I don't think there's been a more powerful scene that I've seen, at least this year.
I think not so much Pooh asking if he had been let go, but Christopher Robin saying, I suppose so.
Yeah, he kind of almost just brushes it off a little bit,
which
was kind of not okay either.
Yeah. And of course, there's redemption later.
Yes.
But yeah, that's that first one. Yeah, that's a rough scene. I know at least one other adult male in my theater that got choked up on that one.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about there. Huh?
I could be mistaken. I'm not, but I could be. Again, the writing of this film was so strong that you could mix a sequence where Pooh explains that the ladder is broken, and Robin Christopher Robin explains that that's not a ladder, that's a shelf, and Pooh goes, well, that's probably why it wasn't a very good ladder then. Right. You could have that line and turn around and do that scene with Winnie the Pooh saying that maybe it was best that he be let go.
Mm-hmm.
It
was heartbroken when, you know, after the argument and Pooh disappeared. That's like, yeah, boom.
And after that, right after that, he's gone.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't move that fast ever.
Yeah. So,
but he's gone right there.
Exactly. It's just like, oh. And that did choke me up. It was just like, oh, wow. And then at least he found Eeyore and the rest.
And I'll tell you what, I was reading an article by, I can't remember his name. It's a Vanity Fair article about, it kind of reviews the movie. And this guy was a real proponent. And he was very serious about this. He's like, I am really going to be a champion for Jim Cummings being nominated for an Academy Award for his performance. Now, that's unheard of. A voice actor will never, you know, obviously it's not likely to happen. But as soon as I read that and I thought about that scene, I was like, yes, because Cummings played that as well as anybody could play anything that I've seen this year. Even though the movie's called Christopher Robin, Pooh is really the one that, like, sells this movie. I mean, it really, he's the center behind all this movie.
He's the glue that holds it all together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would not argue that. I mean, I would not argue that at all. You know, unfortunately, you know, voice actors don't get the same kind of regard and respect that live actors do, but live action actors, I should say. But I thought there was a lot of great work on this one, but really, Jim, I mean, that moment alone, I would be like, yep, give him the Oscar. Cause that moment is Oscar worthy.
Do you guys think if this movie was released in winter, it would have gotten more attention and more people coming to it?
I think so. To me, it feels more like a late fall movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, summer is so crowded and it's become such kind of the territory of action movies and superhero movies. I kind of wish, like, and the Solo movie is a different case, but I kind of wish they had held some of these movies for fall when people are a little more used to their tone, because I think this could have really shined, because I really enjoyed it. I could tell people in my theater, a variety of ages, enjoyed it. So I kind of wish they had held it, and maybe it would have even gotten some more award season talk. And I'm just afraid, I hope that people don't forget about it, but I'm afraid that they might based on its release time.
One of the issues that you're going to get with releasing a movie like this in the fall is that it will get lost. because people will sit there and say, well, if it's so Oscar worthy, why aren't they releasing it in the winter? Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason why this movie feels so much like the fall is because most of it takes place in a wooded area that's really, there's a lot of fog. There's a lot, and the trees are not exactly spirited.
Well, that is summertime in the UK, though.
Yeah, I know. It's just summertime in the UK.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a reflection on Christopher Robin's, you know, outlook at that time.
Right. In his lost connection.
Right.
He's in a youth. So I think that maybe that's why it felt like a fall. And again, it's a smaller movie being released in the summertime. And they probably expected it to do better than it did in its opening weekend. The early reports indicate 25 million. I know that we didn't talk about the money numbers at the beginning of this one, but that's because I didn't really want to. But the, you know, for 25 million for a movie like this, which we have to admit, it's a small movie. It's a small feel good movie. And I don't know that it may get some Oscar nominations for costume design and possibly for some special effects. Jim Cummings is phenomenal in this film, and I would absolutely back the idea of him being the first voice actor to be nominated. But it won't happen as much as we'd like to. I think we'll see Andy Serkis get something before a voice
probably
actor.
Right about that. Yeah, you're probably right about that. And I think also, I mean, there's a lot of thing that does hold it against it. I mean, even though this is, you know, actually would make a great best movie nomination. Mm-hmm. And I fully hope that it does get at least nominated for best picture, because that would be something that I could applaud. But, you know, because it doesn't have that, you know, usually Oscar winning performances or Oscar winning movies have like these great, huge ensemble casts. And, you know, outside of Ewan and Haley and a couple of other people, it's mostly voice actors and CG. And I think, you know, Hollywood is like, nope, we're not, that's not what we're talking about. So, you know, I want to talk about the voices, the other voices for a minute, too, because I don't want to diminish them. But I also was kind of surprised. I mean, Jim is the only one that I can think of that's coming over from doing Pooh, the voice of Pooh, like consistently for the last, what is it, Alex, a couple decades?
It's over 25 years. Yeah.
OK. So he is the voice of Pooh for all intents and purposes. So but I was kind of surprised that the other voices are not the other characters are not voiced by people who have been doing the voices. Instead, they got this quote unquote all-star British cast, with being Toby Jones and Peter Capaldi. And actually, he's not British. I think he's the only American in this. Brad Garrett, maybe.
Yeah. I was about to say, British talent, Brad Garrett.
I'm not as familiar with the other folks, Sarah Sheen, Sophie Okonedo, and Nick Mohammed, but they're excellent. I mean, I can't fault them. I guess in some ways, kind of like, you know, when I saw that, when I was younger and I saw the British, version of live action version of Alice in Wonderland, and I saw like, you know, Peter Sellers and I think Dudley Moore's in it and all these like great English actors. I was kind of reminded of that in a little way, but I, even though I'm really happy for Jim, I was kind of thinking that, you know, the people that have been voicing these characters for years don't get their shot at it here, which was a little unfortunate maybe.
Yeah. Well, having said that, I mean, you look at a guy like Brad Garrett, who actually has done a lot of previous voiceover work, including Ratatouille for Pixar. He was the voice of Gusto, actually. And of course, my personal favorite, his work on Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, where he was the voice of Hogan. But he's done a lot of work for Disney in the past. So not really surprised to see him be a part of it. Peter Capaldi actually openly surprised me. And I saw his name pop up and I was like, what? And And Mike was actually the one who goes, yeah, he's a rabbit, you know. And I'm just like, and blew it off. He's like, yeah, he's a rabbit, you know. So it was kind of a throw for me. But having said that, I think that the choices they picked, especially in regards to Garrett, Garrett's Eeyore is spot on.
Yes. Yes, he is.
And I think the others were used so sparingly. Eeyore gets a wonderful moment in this, in which he's the first to really, aside from Pooh, to really recognize Christopher Robin. And there's a moment in which, you know, this gloomy, gloomy character's eyes widen. And he's like, it really is Christopher Robin. And they have a moment together, which honestly, I don't want to spoil. I think people should go see the movie and see this scene. But it really, I think it shows Ewan McGregor at his best in this film.
Oh, very much so. I agree with
that. And it works so well. The banter with him and Eeyore, when Eeyore is convinced he's a heffalump, is riotous.
The sequence where he's watching Christopher Robin kind of quote unquote defeat and fight the heffalump is
fighting the heffalumps. Yeah,
I'm like, you know, for a creature that doesn't have, like, I mean, they're just buttons for eyes, right? They're just these little, like, they're not expressive, and yet I'm sensing so much expression on him.
Yeah.
Like this sort of, you know, confusion, amusement. I mean, it's all there in this performance, which is not really the case. I mean, he's not really there, but it's an amazing, it's, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And, you know, obviously you don't get movies like Christopher Robin without movies like without Roger Rabbit, like breaking new ground. And then, you know, two decades later, you're able to get something like this.
Yeah.
No, definitely true. And it was the interactions between them you would not be able to do. And it was so wonderful. The train station scenes with the balloon, and, you know, it was just awesome with Pooh Bear. And, you know, when Christopher Robin was talking to Pooh, and, you know, in public, and people looked as like, oh, no, not really, couldn't be. And then the scene towards the end, when the daughter had the stuffed animals in the cab,
mm-hmm.
That was just classic.
Ashley, is there anything in this movie that didn't work for you?
Oh, gosh, I was trying to think about that. I really don't have any complaints that immediately come to mind. I guess you could say that a few times maybe the theme is a little bit heavy-handed, but even that didn't really bother me because I think it's so true. Like you guys have said, with kind of the world we're going through now, and there's a lot of anger and people kind of isolating themselves and getting focused on stress and just busy with like life and work. It was kind of nice. And I think sometimes we just need to have that theme really hammered on really obviously. And I just love the message of, you know, friendship being important and kindness. And I honestly think that's a theme that Hollywood can't push hard enough. Just that idea of kindness and learning to care about others. So I, as much as I think about it, I can't really find any particular complaints for me.
Alex?
One of the things that Mike and I actually mentioned after the film was over was that we were kind of surprised at the length of the movie. This is a 90-minute film. This is a 90-minute film, and it's stretched out to 144 minutes, an hour and 44 minutes. So it's stretched out an extra 15 minutes, and there are moments where it kind of feels like we're running a little long in a scene, but honestly, it's not enough to take away from the film. It's just one of those things where when it's over, you kind of go, oh, that was good. A little longer than I expected, but really good. So if I had one complaint, I would say it's because at the end of the movie, it feels a little long. But it's not like Avengers where they have to fit in every character in the Marvel universe, except apparently for Hawkeye and Drax. But I didn't see him at all in that film. But other than that, I think, it wasn't that sort of case. I think it was just I think really they were just trying to establish the mood and setting and everything. And it just wound up being a film that feels a little bit longer than it actually is.
Mike, anything that didn't work for you?
Truthfully, I think you and I were actually even speaking about this a little bit before we started recording tonight. I loved the movie, but there was just some scenes that just felt like they dragged on just a little bit too much. Mostly the scenes where it involved Christopher Robin doing paperwork or, having to do the office scenes or, that just felt like it was almost like a little too much. And, it could have been shortened a little bit. And, it felt to me like much longer than just 90 minutes. There were times, I was like sitting in there and like, oh, this is great. This is beautiful. This is wonderful. God, we've been in here 2 hours already. And then when we got out, it was just like, oh, okay. So it just felt like there's certain things that could have been fleshed out a little bit more. And, I don't know if I was the only one, though, when they were going through the train station looking for platform 9 3/4.
I'm sure you're not the only
same,
one.
Same.
Yeah, I don't think you can look at an English train station and not think of that. That's impossible now. Thanks, JK. I didn't think it was too long. I didn't think it felt anything felt padded. In fact, I thought that it felt like, if anything, deliberately paced. And I find that quite refreshing when, especially I think seeing the documentary for Fred Rogers last weekend and how it was important for him that there be quiet moments. I mean, he was all about quiet moments and making, like, there's just as much power in quiet moments as there are in noisy moments. And I think this film, although it doesn't relish that, I think it does sort of use that and it goes at a deliberate pace on purpose, much like Pooh, goes on a deliberate pace on purpose. The only thing that didn't work for me, and this is a slight critique, a very slight critique, is that I didn't think, I didn't know what they were trying to do with the coworkers. It seemed like they were trying to make some sort of parallel between his coworkers and the characters in 100 Acre Wood, but it didn't really match up, and I was sort of left confused by them. It seemed like each one of his coworkers is a character unto themselves, but we don't get a chance to meet them, and instead it just seems kind of confusing. Like, I get it that we want to feel sorry for them because we don't want them to be let go, but by the other hand, I was like, I don't know what they're trying to do with them a little bit. I thought they kind of maybe dropped the ball a little bit with defining them a little bit better.
There may have been more to that that simply got cut from the film.
Absolutely.
And I kind of feel like the resolution at the end seems sort of, oh, well, that's incredibly easy, isn't it?
Maybe
a little too easy.
But sometimes it's just that simple, damn it.
Yeah, and again, this is we're talking about a bear of very little brain, but certainly of immense heart, and so an ending like that can kind of make sense.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree. I think I think when we got out of there, Michelle said it was, like I said, a little bit hokey, and I'm like, but that's how it has to be. I mean, that's what we're celebrating. The fact that it is hokey and sometimes as an adult, you kind of make things overcomplicated. Why do things have to be so complicated? Why can't they be a simple solution? And maybe it's wishful thinking that there would be. Obviously, even though this takes place in the past, I mean, we've still got issues, much, much more complicated issues going on now. So. But I can praise this movie. I do want to see it again. I don't know if I'll get a chance to see it on the big screen, but I really, the more I think about this movie, the more I love it. actually. I love it more and more the more I think about it. And like I said, it's like a I really feel like it's like a movie version of a hug from a stuffed bear. And I'm like, wow, how could, like, if that was the goal, like, what do you want to make this movie? I want to make it as when people walk out, they feel like they've been hugged by a stuffed bear. I'm like, how would you even remotely begin to do that? Well, damn it, Mark Forster and company have a mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned. I guess we can go around and rate it real quick. Ashley, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a very strong 4.5 stars. I feel like there's not too much else I can say about it. It's a really sweet, heartwarming movie. And sometimes it's just nice to have something like that. As I was walking out of the theater, I thought it's been a long time since I've seen kind of a movie build toward families and kids that was just so, just felt kind of sweet and simple. And there was humor that people laughed at, but it ever didn't feel like dumb or lowbrow. And there was enough for the adults to think about too. So this is a great one that families can really go to see together. And I hope that more people hear about it and do go to see it, because it's just a really nice little film to kind of cap off the summer movie season.
And like you said, I think I'm glad you got a chance to see it. And we can thank Alex again for that, to see it on the big screen, because when you see it at home, it's kind of might lose a little bit of its presence.
I think there was something special about being there and just like hearing the little kids laugh at Pooh's antics. I think him and his quote unquote ladder got the biggest laughs, but it was just nice to hear, like, I can hear adults and kids laughing at the same thing. And there's just something special again about how we all gasped when kind of Pooh said, "Are you letting me go?" You can hear everyone just kind of suck in that sharp intake. So there really is nice about having that special communal experience with this movie.
Absolutely. Alex, what about you?
I would give it 5 honeypots, but one of them appears to be empty. Oh. So I'm going to give this.
Wonder
one
who's
4.
Responsible for that.
Well, I don't know. I'm giving this one 4.5 stars. I think this is one of my favorite films of the summer. I am so glad that we decided to make this one of the ones that we really wanted to talk about on this one, even if it means sacrificing. Talking about the latest Tom Cruise blow up actioner. This movie would get 6 stars if there had been one kaiju in it. But for the most part, no, this is a great movie. And it's a great feel good movie. It is one that's perfectly appropriate for all ages. CinemaScore gave it an A score. So with no other real family movies coming out over the next few weeks, perhaps this one will get more legs. And I think that'd be really nice and have everybody get the opportunity to see it. So, yeah, 4.5 for me.
Mike?
Okay, here we go. All right. Let us see. I'm thinking that maybe, you know, I would love to give it a 4.5 because of the feel good and how wonderful all the different characters were, even like Mark Gatiss in it, you know, geez, for me to say that about Mark Gatiss, you know, it was fun.
You've never seemed to be annoyed by his acting before.
Oh, please. Yes, I have, mister. Oh, do I need to bring up those tapes, sir?
No. We've got all those episodes of ESW recorded. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And don't even start on with how he was on Sherlock. Come on, no. But I'm going to give it a 4. I want to give it higher. I just can't. There's just something about it that wasn't hitting for me. I don't know what it is. I love the animation. I love the interaction. I loved all the actors. Just something about the story just left me a little flat. And so I can't give it anything less than a 4. That would just not a bore. So I have to stick with a 4.
Okay. I want to give this movie a 5 so badly. But there is something that is preventing me from that. I think I might be basking in the glow of it. So I kind of want to wait until the dust settles before I really, because, you know, I've seen this with, you know, as particularly Disney movies before. Like I was completely in love with Tomorrowland a couple years ago. Right. And now I'm like, what was that movie with George Clooney? Oh, yeah. So there is some sort of, you know, after effect that sometimes I have to. And for me, a five needs to be able to continually. I'm like continuously thinking about it. It's something that really ranks up there. So I'm going to go with a 4.5 because I think it's that good. And I do think it has the potential to be one of my favorite movies, not only of this year, but just for a while. You know, we've talked a lot about Disney this year with like 3 Marvel movies, 1 Star Wars movie, 1 Pixar movie. It's been crazy how Disney has just ruled the box office this year. But I got to tell you, this little film, this is not like it's barely a blip on their radar. I think to me, it might be more powerful than all of them. Certainly, I think I enjoyed watching it more than a lot of them, let's put it that way. So credit to all of the filmmakers for making this. This is just, it was way better than I ever could have hoped and dreamed it would be. So very cool. Well, thanks all. Man, I'm sad if this is like, I mean, I guess it's a good one to go out on if this is our last summer movie.
Yeah.
I guess we're all just going to hang out in the 100 Acre Wood until it's time for us to talk about the summer wrap up in September. That ain't too bad, right?
Yeah.
Well, we could always do the Happy Time Murders.
Okay.
For a complete change of pace.
Exactly. I know, right? So anyway, thanks guys. We appreciate it. And we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con.
Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, tubby little tubby all stuffed with fluff, he's Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, willy-nilly silly.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about Gen Con. So I had the opportunity to attend Gen Con this year. If you aren't sure what Gen Con is, it is a giant board gaming convention in Indianapolis that's held every year. I really enjoyed the con. I got to play some fun games, I got to see some fun games played, and there were some really cool costumes. I also got to catch a few fun musical acts in the hallways. Lots of stuff was going on. One thing about Gen Con that was really weird to me is they have a ticketing system for playing games and to attend panels. This is really weird to me because you have to purchase a badge for the convention as well. You buy different tickets for different games. They vary in different prices. And you do all this months before the con. Or you can buy generic tickets to use on games at the convention that maybe have no shows or that have demos that aren't full. There are some free games you can play and demo as well, but there really isn't no outline to what is free and what is ticketed. It's really weird and confusing, and their webpage really doesn't have much info about it. So anyone who is new to the convention that may not know about this, yeah, it's really strange. And a lot of the concerts and parties at the con are also ticketed as well. And there is a separate line for badges and a separate line for tickets, so you have to get your badge if you don't have it mailed to you. I got lucky and had mine mailed. And then you get in this long line for tickets at will call as well. So it's really, really strange to me. So I do say, if you love board games, totally look into this con. But do a lot of research. Since it was such a weird model for a con from what I'm used to, like going to Dragon Con or going to Otakon or other fan conventions. So it was a little weird, but it was still a really, really good time. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Con! Well, August is pretty bare in terms of conventions that ESO Network people are going to be at. August 17th through the 19th is in Potterverse in Rockville, Maryland. That is Geek Girl Angela is going to be at that show. But really, it's you know, everybody's just gearing up for Dragon Con. August 31st through September 3rd in Atlanta, Georgia. It's going to be a great time. There's going to be a lot of ESO Network folks there, including Mike and myself. Ashley Pauls, who's on this show, she will be there, her first ever Dragon Con. So it's going to be very special for her and us all, I think. From Earth Station Who, Mary Ogle will be there. From the Flopcast, our good buddy Kevin Eldridge will be there. Angela Pritchett, the Geek Girl herself, will be in attendance at that show too. The entire hosting cast of Nerd Bliss, Chris, Tina, Eric, and Dan will all be attending. They are coming. Nerd Bliss is in full force at Dragon Con. Thomas from the Geekly Oddcast and Joe and Brad from the Cigar Nerds will all be attending Dragon Con. There's going to be a lot of friends of the station there as well. It's going to be a good time. If you're going to be there, you are automatically, you're listening to this now, so you are automatically a friend of the station. So we want to see you. I got my table number in Artist Alley. So Mike Gordon, Tiki Zombie, will be represented in Artist Alley on the fourth floor of America's Mart at table number 831. So 831, kind of towards the back, but you'll definitely be able to see the Tiki Hut roof. That should stand out amongst the crowd. So just look for that and come on by and say howdy. We're going to have some really cool stuff there, some cool new projects I've been working on. The end result, I'm crossing my fingers, will be ready in time. So I'll be working on that, but it's going to be a great time. If you really want to know exactly what all the panels are going to be like, because we're getting our panel schedules, nothing's nailed down yet. So we will be making announcements closer to the convention is where you can find us. Also, stay tuned to the last pre-show 2018 Dragon Con report coming up in about two and a half weeks. That's going to explain where all of us are going to be at. So, and what we're looking forward to and where you can find us. So you'll definitely want to tune into that. It's going to be a great time. And then afterwards, I don't have any convention because we're all going to be too tired. We're going to have to rest up for the rest of the year. So there's not going to be any ESO Network upcoming appearances after that. I'm just kidding. We will be able to announce those pretty soon. But for right now, we're all geared towards Dragon Con, so we hope you see you there because we love talking about conventions with people at conventions. So check us out.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Let's thank our movie people. Ashley, thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you. It's always great chatting movies with you guys.
Anything you want to shout out about real quick?
Yeah, I actually kind of spoiled my own shout out earlier. I wanted to talk real quickly about the latest Mission Impossible movie, Fallout. It was really good. Usually the sixth movie in a franchise like this isn't something to get super excited about, but it's really exciting. Lots of great stunts, intriguing plot. And so if you haven't gotten a chance to see that, it's a good movie too. Not heartwarming in the same way that Christopher Robin is, but definitely a good time at the movies. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's worth going back for.
We should also point out too that even though this is the last movie we'll be reviewing on the Earth Station One podcast, Ashley, you'll be continuing to review movies over the summer, I would imagine.
Yes. It's always a little bit of a dead time here as we come into late August and September, but things will start picking up again soon. So seem to be some interesting ones headed our way this fall.
Just remember, though, Infinity War comes out next week on Blu-ray and DVD.
Yes, I'm already eagerly looking forward to watching that again.
Not even on a bet.
It'll be here right before you could snap your fingers. It's awesome. All right, Alex, thank you so much, my friend.
It's always a pleasure to get the opportunity to talk with movies with you guys. And by you guys, I mean all three of you. We always have a great dynamic. And I think this is maybe one of the first ones of this year where I think we were all just perfectly in agreement on the film. So very interesting.
Most definitely. And anything you're going to shout out about?
Yeah, just a real quick shout out, because it was a big deal for me this year. This past week, Jeremy Bullock announced his retirement from the con scene. He is hanging up his Boba Fett helmet, and he will no longer be making appearances. The man deserves the time to rest. But I got to see him at his last convention and had my photo taken with him, and it's something I'm never going to forget. So thank you.
That's cool.
Yeah, he announced it on Friday. Obviously, as a member of the 501st, we're all just honored to have him be a member, and we'll miss him at the shows.
Most definitely. Definitely. And you could not stop raving when we were talking the other night how great it was to actually meet him.
It was a long time coming, and I'm glad that I got the chance. And if it happened to be that I got to see him at the last con, then clearly it's something I did, and I'm terribly sorry to all the fans.
And yes, you could reach Alex Autry, care of the ESO Network.
Exactly. Send your angry letters to
7th Row Center, ESO Network.
Like anybody's checking that box anymore. Yeah. Yeah, send them there.
And of course, you got to thank Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
What you going to shout out about tonight, sir?
Well, I have to give a shout out to, it was talk about a perfect day. On Saturday, saw the Christopher Robin movie. We were feeling so good that we went to, I'm so blessed. Sometimes, when I'm dealing with traffic going back home and to work and here and everywhere, I curse this bloody town that we live in, Atlanta. But I must admit that I've gotten to have some great experience to see some great exhibits here. And the one that's currently at the High Museum, Winnie the Pooh, Exploring a Classic, is a terrific exhibit. It's perfectly timed with this movie, even though it has no tie-ins with this movie. It's not like they put this on. Well, I'm sure that's not a coincidence, but they didn't, like, there's no overt, I don't even think there's any cross promotion of the movie in there at all. And it's basically just an exhibit of the illustrations by Shepard, the original illustrations that, there's a lot of illustrators out there that have worked on children's books, but Winnie the Pooh is really a co-collaboration between Milne and Shepard. And this exhibit really shows that. And consequently, when you see the movie, Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh and characters are credited with both as creators with both Milne and Shepard, which I think that's the first time I've seen that. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
But I think that may be, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's so appropriate. And this exhibit shows you exactly why the two of them were literally on the same page every step of the way of this. The illustrations, they are over 60, 70 years old, right? I mean, the first one, the first like stuff from the first stories with Pooh came out in 1923. And that's just fantastic. Like there's just these original drawings and they're just exquisite, and it's a great presentation. And I definitely encourage people, if you are in the Atlanta area, even if you're not, travel to Atlanta. You have to through September 2nd to see this exhibit. I don't know where it's going to go to next, but if it's touring, catch it, because it's beautiful. And I know, Alex, you feel the same way because you saw it on Saturday as well.
I did. I saw it that Saturday. One of my favorite things in that exhibit was, first of all, in one of the rooms, you could actually hear a reading of the Winnie the Pooh stories. And it's the only known recording of Milne doing a reading, which is cool. And also somebody that I got to meet this year, James Hance, who did the Wookiee the Chew pieces that a lot of fans love. Some of his artwork is in a special section of that display, and showing the various satirical and other versions of the character Winnie the Pooh from around the world and over time.
Yeah, it's quite excellent. So we'll have a link to it in the show notes. So check it out. And the website's really fun because bees follow your cursor around all the time, all over the place. It's kind of cute. So yeah, check it out.
Most definitely. And folks, if you're going to be in town for Dragon Con, it's still going to be in town also, right?
Pretty much that'll be the last weekend.
Exactly.
And if that's the first weekend of the month, I should mention, especially if you're thinking of coming to town to see this, Bank of America, if you have a Bank of America credit card or debit card, you get into the museum for free during the weekend. It gives you one pass.
And also, if you're in town this weekend by some chance, it's free on Sunday.
Well, there you go.
Because it's the second Sunday, is always free at the High Museum.
Crap, I wish I'd known that. It's one of the few times I think I ended up paying cash. And if I had just given him my debit card, it's a Bank of America card.
Oops.
Oh, well, it was worth it. I'm not complaining. It was totally worth it. I did not feel like I was gypped at all.
Okay, there you go. I'm going to do a quick movie review also, just a shout out for it. Friday night, Judy and I watched a movie by Wes Anderson, and it is called Isle of Dogs. It's an animated film, and for anyone who's a fan of Wes Anderson films, this one ranks right up there with his other movies. And it's a great, great story. I don't want to give any plot away because that's the whole idea about the Isle of Dogs is self-explanatory. But it's great because the dogs actually speak English, but it takes place in Japan and all the humans speak Japanese and they don't put subtitles, which is pretty darn awesome. So it's a fun movie. Definitely moving and heart-wrenching from the heart, another one, but in a different way. I definitely would recommend it, and it's out on Blu-ray or DVD or streaming. You definitely could check it out. So definitely do. So that is going to wrap up this episode for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Before we get out of here, we'll be back again next week, and we will be talking all about Westworld Season 2. So the series is over for another year on HBO. It's going to be fun going out to the Old West and finding out what happened after the robots rebelled. Should be kind of interesting to see what happens. But until then, we will see you then. Peace. And we're done.
All right.
Hey. You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.